CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Edition of my so-called 8-bit life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today, Jonathan and Garrett of Weird At Last.
Yo, how's it going, guys?
So before the free show, we were talking about this, and even though normally I lead in and explain how the hell I met these guests and everything else, I'll go into that in a second. Only because we tabled this right then and there, and I wanted this on the main show proper. Before we get on there, we somehow start talking about just, you know, the 90s bands and early 2000s bands and how they began and just sharply fell off. And Jonathan said the following, and I want to quote it right. Papa Roach got us somewhere. I don't know where. Where the hell did Papa Roach get us? I want you to defend this now.
I'm speaking for nu metal. I think nu metal, Papa Roach was like a symptom of nu metal. And
what was the cure? It's like Papa Roach got us somewhere with nu metal. Where?
I guess indie rock, but then that just led to more problems like Four on the Floor folk.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is, no matter what, like, even if it's a musical kind of mistake, you got to be grateful for it existing because it did something.
Right.
It did something.
I mean, I guess that's all we can hope for. I mean, you know, and like, this is not dissing Papa Roach in any capacity. I mean, look, if you make your hit, you get the money, rock and roll. You accomplish something very few do. So, you know, congratulations. Keep on rocking. It's just like, wow, I really want to know where it led us. And like, I almost want to imagine, like, that is the reason, like, Hot Topic exists.
Oh, God, yeah.
That
in my camp.
Yeah.
God. So now that we've tabled that, we've gotten back to this, I should probably explain how the hell I got these guys on. So a while back, we had Mike from Boy Meets Robot on. And he's a chiptune artist. He'd approached me over Twitter. And you know, he'd worked with Megaran before. And so I've had Megaran on many times. He essentially mentioned like how he got on there. It sort of says something along the lines of taking a chance and messaging people. Lo and behold, you two hear this episode, or somehow it gets to your purview, and you followed that advice and just cold sent me an email, which rarely happens, and I'm always happy when it does, because I like, you know, learning new music, like learning new artists and everything else. But the thing that caught, you know, my eye when I'm reading all this stuff and reading about your band, you gave me the whole, like, spiel, everything else, was that you guys recorded this in your album in your apartment.
Yeah, we recorded everything between my apartment where I'm sitting right now and Garrett's apartment where he's sitting.
Yeah. Okay, so you actually weren't in the same location. Wow, that's even more impressive.
Well, we spent a lot of time tracking vocals in my apartment. So we did all the vocals here, but Garrett was doing Game Boy and guitar parts in his apartment, and just, you know, we're just sending files back and forth to each other.
Okay. So we should probably, you know, before we kind of start talking about the band, the album, and everything else, I guess I'll start with you, Garrett, because we always tend to talk about the past a bit and try to get, you know, everyone kind of that. What got you into chiptunes? Like, why, what attracted you out of all things musically? Because obviously, you know, you play guitar and you actually play what people would call real instruments. So why would you play with toys as silly non-chiptunes people would stare at a Game Boy?
Right. Well, like I said in the pre-show, I grew up in Buffalo, New York, and I saw a show over at the punk venue, I guess, in Buffalo called Mohawk Place. And there was some dude that was playing literally just one Game Boy. and rocking it harder than I had like really ever seen.
Who was the guy? Who was Ralph? Really? Okay.
It's Ralph. It blew my mind. And I didn't even know that this culture really existed. And I didn't know it even existed in, like, Buffalo's a small place, but it even existed there. And there's people like Arm Cannon, Dan Mulcan is there, and like it's actually a really big scene over there.
Well, New York, you guys had the early, especially in the early days, you had the tank up in New York proper, the city,
right.
Where, like, you know, that was where Blipfest happened. That's where, like, Blipfest US happened, was there with, like, BitShifter and Null Sleep and all these big heavyweights in the genre. So you guys were like, for guys that grew up in Texas and got into chiptunes a little bit late, would stare in envy of New York, just because, like, everything was going on there and everyone was sort of playing all this weird stuff, because, like, a lot of the punk crowd just sort of, like, shifted this way.
Right. No, and I ended up at Blip Festival I do video as well as music, and I, after finding out about chiptune, was like, hey, let's find a way to get some money to go to Blip Festival and shoot some stuff there. And I shot some stuff with Amaguchi, some stuff with Chipsol, and Blip Fest was amazing, man.
I got lucky this past trip going to Japan, because I went to their. It basically is the remnants of Blipfest there. It's
right.
I forget the event name, but I got lucky and saw Chipsol finally perform live, and she's
phenomenal.
She is. She's amazing, and that, well, that's cool to know that's sort of how you got into it, that you got introduced as one band. Like, what the fuck is this? You mean you can play music on the Game Boy?
Yep.
So then, how did you then go from all of that? To then like getting into it, like, obviously you know the Game Boy can make music,
right?
Like, did you just immediately get a copy of LSDJ or Nano Loop and just?
I did get a copy of LSDJ pretty much immediately after that, just as a ROM at first, and then downloaded or purchased like a flash cart. They weren't selling them on the site at the time. I think I missed it by like a year, but there were people that were selling just like USB cartridges that they'd flash it to it for you.
Yeah.
And yeah, just kind of dug into it and watched a lot of tutorials, a lot of them from like Dan Mulcannon and stuff like that online, and really just dug deep into it. And a lot of it was based off of that doc that I ended up making at Blip Festival. I needed to soundtrack it somehow, and I didn't
know
how
to clear. Wait, what doc did you make?
I made a doc called Game Create, and it was just about like indie gamers and what people are doing with game systems, specifically like old games.
Okay, just making sure it's like I don't want to hear like, yeah, I worked a little bit on Reformat the Planet, and just like, hold on a second, we would shut the entire like show down, and I'd feel bad for Jonathan because I'm like, fuck it, we gotta talk about, like, this is that, but
dude,
I'm not saying
the
bad way, just like we'd have to take a hard pause.
It was a complete ripoff of it, and it came out a month after it. Like, I was making it for a year, and then Reformat the Planet came out. I'm like, fuck! I can't compete with that at all.
No,
so it was fun,
the one to really give the eyes. Okay, so
just
Jonathan, we'll come back to you in a second, because I'm going to kind of switch gears. But Jonathan, how did you get into music in general then? Like, in terms of stuff, like, obviously, I asked Chiptunes, we'll ask you the same thing in a second, Garrett, but I'm just curious, especially like your musical background.
Well, I grew up in a kind of musical family. My grandpa was a jazz musician in the 50s, and had like reached like a level of, I guess, like kind of low level prominence, just like people knew who he was and he was playing with some bigger names, and then had my uncle and then my grandma was kind of like, okay, like it's time for a real job. So he just kind of, you know, he kept playing, but I grew up around him and him playing guitar. And, you know, I started asking him to teach me how to play guitar when I was like 8 years old, and just kind of went from there. And I started trying to form a band when I was like 12, and I've just been.
What was the name?
Oh God, I don't even remember.
Oh, come on, you know the name. You know.
Have to.
Yeah. Even if it was a lame name, you know it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it was awful. The first band name I remember And I'm sure there was something that was even worse than this. The first band name I remember, I think I was 13, and we were in a band called Alleyway.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not laughing. It could have been worse. It could have been worse. It could have been worse than Alleyway. I mean, Alleyway at least is it can sound like a generic band name. It could have been worse. It could have been just like, yeah, we were called, you know, the Lords of Darkness or something like that. So,
like, it was cringy, but not that cringy. Like, it's cringy enough that, like, you could see it passing for, like, a fake band name in a movie where the band was, like, very, very peripherally related to the plot of the movie. Like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, that's the band.
Well, because, like, my favorite fake band name, I think, in any of those kind of things is Loveburger from Can't Hardly Wait.
Oh, shit.
Well, because I love that band name and that specific storyline of that movie, because you see the band like begin, collapse, begin again, and it's like, let's try this one more time. All right, the cops comes like, fuck it, we gotta get the hell out of here now. And I love that thing, because it's just the guy's like, look, I made shirts. You made shirts? Why? You know, like all these, like it's my favorite beeline of that movie, just because you never hear them play anything, and that's the point, you know. But it's my favorite, like, just band name of like Loveburger, like, awesome. Well, let's see what this is all about.
Almost reminds me of like the Oneaters.
Yes, the Wonders.
The Wonders,
yeah, with the thing you do. The Oneaters. It's the Wonders. Yeah, trying to play off the Beatles thing. God, that was a better movie than I think people give it credit. Yeah. What about you, Garrett? What was your, obviously, we talked about your chiptunes background, but what the hell got you into music in the first place?
So my dad raised me on a lot of classic rock. The Stones was like the first band that I heard that was like, wait, music could be good instead of whatever the crap was on the radio. And I heard Exile on Main Street, and it like blew my mind. And I was taking piano lessons at the time, because that's what parents make you do.
For sure.
And
understood.
That was the first time where I realized, oh wait, the piano can be used for like a cool song, and like tried to learn some blues and stuff on that. And then took up the trombone in like fourth grade.
And then ska happened, and then you're like, I could be like real big fish.
Yep. I heard Two for One and decided I could play that. And I was in a couple ska bands.
All right. What was the first ska band name you remember?
First ska band, I went to an all Catholic guy high school.
I want to hear the name of this band
it's
now.
Really bad. We called ourselves Thief in the Night and shortened it to Thief.
Of course you do. Because, you know, why not to let the people like, you mean like the video game?
Yeah, like the video game. No. But, yeah, it was really bad. It was really, really terrible. And I'm very glad that I have it in my past. But no one look it up.
Someone looks on YouTube. Hi, we're Thief in the Night. We're gonna play nothing but specials covers.
Exists.
We're gonna play that Boston song everyone remembers. All right, ready? Let's go.
I now know what I'm spending my night doing after.
Yeah.
Pick it up.
Yep. I was definitely that guy screaming, pick it up, and then skanking with the trombone.
Of course you were. Of course. That's what you do. That's what you did in 90s ska. That's all you did was that. You know, two-tone had a little bit of style, but then the 90s happened, and we had to add skanking and just the same stuff. I mean, don't get wrong, I love ska, and I will not, you know, I'll never never not admit it, but...
Oh, no, I still love ska. No, I do.
That's like, you love what you love, but it's just, it's so funny when you look back at some of those things, just like, this is...
It was something. But it got me into some good music, too, because of trombone. I started playing in the jazz band, and then, like, the exact opposite of that was, like, just pure punk and unadulterated, like... rock music. So it just kind of opened me up to other shit, and I started playing guitar because of that, because I couldn't really show the guitarist how to play what I wanted him to play, so it was better just to learn it.
So now I gotta ask, especially because we've now gotten both your musical backgrounds, we'll get your geeky background soon, but I am curious, how the hell did you two meet? How did you guys, like, you know, you coming from, I mean, both came from very similar music backgrounds, jazz, rock, and all kinds of weird stuff. You both have played in bands before. You obviously got to chiptunes, all that stuff. How did you two even, you know, remotely meet?
Well, should I tell the puppy story?
Okay. You already know it's good. You already know it's good when you've named the story. You know, you already know, like, when it's like, let me tell you the puppy story. It's like, okay, they've told it before many times. Take it away, sirs.
Well, the thing is, going back to the ska thing, the fact that we met at all is because of ska. So
yep,
that's kind of where this all starts. But Garrett, you should tell the puppy story.
So Jeff Rosenstock of Bomb the Music Industry fame and Arrogant Sons of Bitches hit us up on Twitter saying, "Hey, I'm looking for some horn players for the Chris Gethard show, which is a show on fusion. He's like a local New York comic who's actually getting like really huge now. And he was asking for horn players. So I emailed him and was like, "Hey, I play trombone and I really like your music. I'd love to play with you." He hits me back saying, "Do you mind dressing up as a dog on TV?"
Please tell me there's footage of this somewhere.
Oh yeah, it exists.
Oh, thank God.
I'll put it in the chat room. if you search Chris Gethard, Jeff Rosenstock on YouTube, I'm sure it's the first video that shows up.
Producer, find something, because this is okay. So,
and I meet Erica, who is our lovely keytarist in the band. She is playing percussion and a longtime friend of Jeff Rosenstock. And I meet her in this band, and she's telling me about her other bands, one of them, which is Binary Heart, which John is also in.
Right.
We become friends, puppy friends. We are both dressed up as dogs playing to a bunch of puppies.
By the way, Sergeant Muff in the chat room is asking, did you get to high-five the human fish?
Oh, yeah, of course. The human fish is rad.
I'm unfamiliar with this. You may have to explain this to me and to the audience members that have no idea. I'm very curious. Explain this, because I realize we're taking a turn, but I'm curious now.
It's a deep story. That's why I was like, I'm just going to tell the short version, but the Chris Gethard show is basically a reaction to late night talk shows. Of like, it's all the same fucking formula of like, hey, oh, you're working on this thing right now. Yep. That's cool. Cool, yep. You're the best thing ever. Play that.
Opening monologue. Bit, interview, sound bites, show clip if part of movie, show clip if part of television, you know, take break, boom, boom, boom. Yeah, agreed.
You did it. Yeah, you're on NBC.
Yeah.
So Chris Gethard is the exact antithesis of that. And like, he's like, why can't we just straight up go into like feelings on this show? Why can't we just have a real meaningful conversation with someone? Why can't we go into a weird SNL style sketch in the middle of an interview? And the human fish, for instance, is a character that's been around since they're like old TV days, like before they're on TV, they were just like community channels. And he's an old character where they would just ask him a 50-50 question. So it would be like, Madonna versus Trump. And he would answer one word and that is it. And that was his whole bit. And they'd try and guess why he'd say that. And he wouldn't really give anything else than that. And he's a shirtless, very hairy man with flippers and swimming goggles.
This sounds like a fever dream someone had. It sounds like someone was like just smoked some peyote or did something crazy, and this is their like spiritual journey, and that's who they encountered was the fish man. Like that's their spirit animal. It's like, really, this is who I ended up with? All right, take me away, fish man. Show me where I need to go in my life of living. Where, show me the journey that I must take to achieve greatness. Fish man.
He's like the turtle from that Simpsons episode.
Yes, he is. He is the find your soulmate Homer dog.
Yes. perfect. But yeah, and now seeing that actor in like other roles, because he's doing other stuff now too on right. top of Human Fish. Oh. Like, why are you wearing a shirt and where are your flippers?
So, okay, so you obviously meet each other through that band.
Right. I meet Erica through Jeff Rosenstock. Erica says, hey, come to my other band show, Binary Heart. And that's where I meet John.
So yeah, then what got you two to then form another thing? Because obviously, you know, meeting bands is one thing, being part of them another thing, meeting people entirely different. What then got you guys to then form even to do something together?
Right. Somehow the topic of conversation when we were all at this show together turned to chiptune music. And I had just been getting into it. Like, I was like very early on, had just downloaded my first like chiptune tracker and was like, I kind of want to do a thing. I don't know. So like the conversation turned to that, and Garrett is like, oh, chiptune, that is 100% my thing. So him and I started talking about it, and I was like, listen, I kind of made this demo and I don't know, like, what do you think of it? And it was like the first chiptune pop punk demo thing that I'd recorded, just in my bedroom, being like, I don't know. Like, I'd never recorded anything before. I'd never made a chiptune before. I was just like, this is my first time just kind of
just
doing
Give me brutal honesty. Tell me what you think and point me in it. You know, if there's something that could be worked on, point me in that direction.
Yeah. So Garrett and I went outside and I played it for him on my phone, and he liked it. And I was like, oh, okay. All right.
It was great. And like, I had heard, like, I Fight Dragons, obviously, but like, I had not heard any other chiptune pop punk band, like, of those two genres really being.
Well,
because
like for
together.
A while, like, the only real two were that and like Onomatogoochee to a certain degree.
To a certain degree. Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
You know, but so. But even that being said, like, it's definitely, you know, chiptunes is that weird genre that skews heavy towards electronica and EDM, and when it doesn't skew that way, it varies. Like it has to sort of like it always goes that way. But then people start going like, well, you can do more with chiptunes. You don't have to make this heavy dance stuff. It's cool, you are, but you don't have to. You know, you can make this kind of other sound. And I always appreciate when I hear other people do weirder things with chips, you know, and sort of make pop punk or make a jazz or do something completely different that no one thinks to do.
For sure.
So let's back up a bit one more time, because obviously we've talked about chip tunes and everything else, but you know, within this format, we all are nerds of some type, and we've all proven to a degree that we're music nerds in some capacity and movie nerds in some capacity, but. Obviously, when it comes to chiptunes, a lot of people get into it because they played video games. So I'm very curious. We'll start with Jonathan. What was your kind of geek past? What was sort of the thing that got you down the road that would lead you to meet Garrett here and make the amazing chiptunes music you guys are making now?
Like, I guess when I was younger, you know, I was like a, you know, total, you know, anime nerd when I was, you know, like a teenager. I was just like young teenager, just like totally into anime.
What was your first anime series?
Dragon Ball Z.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course it was.
The gateway drug.
Exactly. So yeah, I was really into anime, and you know, I grew up playing Pokemon, and you know, like, kind of never really stopped. I feel like I took a break on the when like the DS was the thing, because I didn't have a DS, but when the 3DS came out, I got that and picked back up with Pokemon again. So like, you know, I was the kid who like imported Gold and Silver when they were only out in Japan, and just bumbled through that, trying real hard to make sense of this not English in front of me.
Staring at hiragana, katakana, kanji, trying to fuss through it. Like, okay, if I hit this option, it means yes. If I hit this one, it means no.
Trying really hard and doing a bad job.
Of course.
So, and like, I feel like I did that. I went through that whole phase, and I was, you know, like, I got to a point where I was just like, you know, like, whatever, like, you know, anime and video games, like, whatever, stuff's kind of behind me, man, like, whatever. And like, It's not. Like it's never
is.
It never is.
You never escape it and no. you shouldn't even try because it's silly to do so.
And then I feel like I got a little bit older and I got like just like way comfortable with myself and was just like, who are you? Just do the shit you like, man. Just do what you care about. Do what makes you feel good. Because when you stop to think about it, a lot of things in the world are terrible. So like if sitting down and like doing an RPG with your friends makes you feel good, just do it. It doesn't matter. So like that's like I just kind of got back into playing a lot of board games and like picking up some video games again. I finally bought my first new console since 2005.
Wow.
So like that's like
so video yeah. games have taken a complete like for you coming back into it just like, oh damn, where
yeah, well, like I played a little bit like in the interim, like I got really into Portal,
okay,
and you know played Portal 1, Portal 2, and like aside from that, like you know just some like little indie games with like my old roommates, because they had my roommates had a PS4 and like we would play like a lot of like the indie multiplayer games, so like we would do that kind of stuff, but. When I moved into the apartment I'm in now, bought a PlayStation 4, and now I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's so different. It's so beautiful.
The world's changed, you know, and we've come a long way. There's a guy I watch online, Adam Kovic on Funhouse. He says we're in kind of a golden age of gaming where like if everything is being made by everybody and you can find what you like and you know you can have a game like No Man's Sky and juxtaposition next to that Gone Home and then right next to that Stardew Valley and then somewhere around there you know Hyper Light Drifter and they're all existing and it's amazing that that's the world we're in. All right, Garrett, what about you, sir? What is your geek past?
I mean, similar geek past of like definitely played games in my childhood.
What was your first system?
I want to say SNES.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure the first game I remember playing was Double Dragon.
Really?
Yeah. Because my parents were like really weird about like no guns in the house, no fighting games, no nothing. Like I wasn't allowed to have a game
system
for a while.
Hold the phone. We're gonna pause here because you dropped the idea that your parents are no guns, no fighting. How does Double Dragon make it past the front door?
Oh no! I went to a friend's house.
Okay, okay, that answers everything. So I'm just like, how does that pass? Like that's all that game is fighting and beating the crap out of people. Like that's a beat 'em up formula. You just you know like there are scenes in the original NES Double Dragon where you're just whipping the shit out of people. Like how does that pass the front door?
Oh, it so did not, which is why I got obsessed with it.
Yep. That's how that works.
Yeah. They and like specifically they said no games like that and don't watch 007. No James Bond.
What?
Oh my God.
This sounds like this is news to Jonathan.
So now I'm freezed on James Bond.
Yeah. This is like I own all of them now
and I can quote like pretty much all of them. So thanks, Mom and Dad.
Wow. What a weird, not in a bad way. We all have our weird things. I mean, like my parents wouldn't let me watch Beavis and Butthead. But somehow they let me watch anime, which is, you know,
weird,
far worse. Yeah. Like they let me slide with Ghost in the Shell and Akira and stuff like that. But jeez. Beavis and Butthead, no. I was at a friend of mine that growing up, that we when we were playing Magic the Gathering, his parents wouldn't let him like his parents were like really really Catholic,
right?
And
that's what mine were.
They wouldn't let him play specifically black. Like he could play any other color in Magic except for black.
Huh.
Oh my God.
Huh.
Yeah, no, that's weird.
I feel that. I get that. Yeah. Okay.
It's like I lived that. That was my life. I couldn't play black either. I had a blue-white deck, and we called it the Holy Roller. That's what that's. Wow. Okay. I'm so fascinated that like that 007 was the one. Like out of all,
I think it's like his like, I'm always gonna sleep with a girl per movie. business, I guess. I don't know.
No, and again, I'm not. You know, like your parents had the best intentions, and we all our parents do.
It was just funny that that was the line.
Yeah, that's why I find it weird. Just like that was like, all right, no guns, no violent video games, no beat 'em ups, and most importantly, fuck James Bond. It's like,
yeah,
whoa,
exactly.
Okay,
exactly. So then, of course, when GoldenEye came out, that was like it. I was done, and they
it's
bought
like,
me
no,
an
N64. No, we're watching Pierce Brosnan. I am taking a stand here. And then the 64
exactly.
version came out. It's like, this is my game, parents. We are
exactly.
playing this game. This is the. I want this game. Wow, that's. That's. I don't mean to dwell on it. Like there have been strange stories in the history of the show. I don't know if that takes the cake per se, but that's up there as a, like the weird thing parents don't let you watch as a kid. It's 007. Wow. I don't mean to be anything. It's just like, that's up.
Well, if anyone was bringing you the weirdness, it would be the guys from Weird at Last.
very much so. So let's shift gears. Cause obviously the reason we got you on, in light of everything else was the album. Obviously, you've kind of explained, Jonathan, like that you sort of started doing pop punk and stuff like that. Was that sort of were you like the antithesis of that? Or when you heard it, like, how did you guys then decide, well, let's just make pop punk chip tunes?
I mean, like I kind of came to Garrett with the idea being like, yeah, like this is kind of where I want to go because, I have like a background in like pop punk and ska. So it was just like, that's something that I really grew up on and really loved. So, like Garrett and I immediately hit it off talking about both pop punk and chiptune. So it seemed like this is really where we're going to mesh really well and where we're going to make the best music together.
Right. And I had done a whole bunch of solo chiptune stuff, up until then, a lot of electronic based stuff, like you said, and some down tempo stuff, and had just left a pop punk band. So I was kind of looking for the next one and just perfect timing.
Yeah. That's sometimes how those things happen. And usually that's when you start to get greatness is when you meet those random encounters that become sort of something more, especially just the idea of like, you're into chiptunes, he's into chiptunes. You're both kind of in the beginnings of making it. And somehow you meet at this one band because a friend of mine is like, come see my other thing. And that's sort of when you, that. So obviously we talked about top of the show that both you guys did all this in your respective apartments, in terms of vocals stuff. What were the challenges working, apart in your separate locations in terms of stuff? Like, what was the biggest challenges of kind of coming together in that regard?
Some of it was for a while I was working a lot in Ableton and John was working a lot in GarageBand and then eventually Logic.
So you're now dealing with two different digital audio, DAWs at that point.
So we both had to kind of like meet in the middle at Logic and figure it out. So that was our first step. And then our second step was definitely like we had a whole bunch of like kind of postal service type problems of like, oh, yeah, I have a demo. I'll send it to you by the end of the week. And I was the biggest offender of this. John would send me something like he'd be like, oh, I worked on something. Here it is. I'd say, I worked on something. I'll send it to you tonight. Forget. He'd text me like a week later, be like, hey, dude, how's that song coming along?
It's like, what song? I saw it. Oh, what shit. Song? That's right.
Yeah, exactly. So that was definitely a big problem. And then just whenever we'd meet up to try and rehearse something, a lot of it was like we'd meet the day of trying to record a track, practice it for a couple hours of just singing it. Because usually we'd track the instruments beforehand and then do vocals only at John's apartment. And it was a lot of practicing with Costa, our drummer, and the guy who produced pretty much the whole record. It was a lot of just like trying to nail those vocals on day of, which is always fun.
Yeah, like we spent, I can't even tell you, like I feel like most of the record, like the lyrics were written the day we recorded them, or at least mostly written the day we recorded them.
We'd have like a chorus and maybe a verse, and then be like, fuck.
Now we gotta write a song. Shit, that's right. I forgot. We have to at least make this a minute. We at least have to do something.
Yeah.
We'd be sitting here, the three of us and my girlfriend, who has been very gracious throughout the entire process, just sitting here, be like, okay, da-da-da-da. Should it be three or two, like what? And then she'd be like, what if you did this? And we're like, oh yeah, that would work. All right, cool. And, like, and it was just that. It was just like all of us just kind of like sitting there staring at each other for a while, being like, oh god, this is just not good the way it is. Like,
well, I mean, that's what you have to do. You have to, like, in any creative work, you have, like, I always say that if you're a creator of something and you're real serious about it, that you have to be comfortable scrapping hours of work.
Exactly.
Like you have to be comfortable saying, that's just not working. Scrap it. Let's try again. And be comfortable throwing stuff away.
We've done that with a couple songs, so for sure.
So, like, what was the hardest song on the album to like accomplish? Cause, I mean, the only reason I'm finding it fascinating just because of the yes, artists can work apart, and that's not uncommon. But usually, when they work apart, it's, you know, because they live they live not with. I mean, obviously, you're within at least driving distance to head to.
Like, right, but I don't have a car.
No. Okay.
being a Brooklyn kid, I unfortunately don't have a car, so it's a like 2-hour train ride.
Okay, that's not so terrible, but I can
it's
see
not
where
terrible, but it's not great.
Yeah, I can now see the challenge of that. I forget right. that's you know as a guy that has a car, but like when I was in Tokyo, like yeah, I can see now how. You know, having those, you know, not being in that distance there. Because again, right. I just find it fascinating the idea of both you guys working in your separate sort of apartments, you know, getting the instrumentation stuff done and then somehow syncing up. Like, was it that, like, how did you guys then divvy up the work? I mean, obviously you said, I had a demo, I have a demo, but eventually you have to kind of come together on something to figure it out.
I think we were lucky in that we both seem to really like what the other person does. So, like, I can come up with something and be like, hey, I got this, and I don't know, it's kind of a disaster, and I'll send it over to Garrett, and he'll be like, okay, I have an idea, and then, like, a week later, send me something back, and I'll be like, oh, you just took what I did and ran with it, and it's amazing. So, like, you know, we kind of have that where we, you know, we'll send something unfinished and be like, try to finish this, I don't know, and then, like...
We both have massive first draft syndrome of like, oh my god, this is terrible, but listen to it before I hit delete.
Right.
So then, luckily the other one usually can finish it off or just tell the other person, yeah, this is shit. Let's move on to the next one.
That makes sense. At least having somebody who's going to be honest with you about like this is good or this can go this direction. Or, like, what if we try this with it and being comfortable. And obviously it sounds like you guys, when you met up, you knew exactly where you're going with, but even more importantly, it sounds, you know, just through this conversation that you're able to bounce those things off. So, okay. So the album comes out like what, how is the, I guess the reaction's been, cause I listened to it. I enjoyed it a ton, but I'm just curious, like when you put it out on Bandcamp, you know, is this, you know, there's people like me that you send it to and we talk about it, but like, how has the reaction been even among your friends, family or anything like that?
Oh, it's go ahead.
After you.
It's been great. I mean, it's been amazing. Like, people have loved it. We've gotten a lot more reaction from it than we thought. I mean, it was something that we recorded in two apartments and over a pretty short amount of time, and people have really liked it. And I mean,
how long did you guys take to get the whole thing down?
I think we figured it was from the first time we met up to like record something. I think we figured it was around 6 months.
That's not, wow. That is pretty fast.
Yeah. So I mean, like from meeting each other to putting something out pretty much was like a total of a year, but the full album was like 6 months. So,
wow. Yeah. That's way faster than I would have imagined. I would have at least figured usually, I would have figured a year at the most, not just because of, you know, music takes time, but wow, 6 months, that's a That's actually faster than I would have thought. So I guess I should ask the question, and this is something that I always wonder. We were talking earlier about band names and stuff like that. How did you guys land on Weird at Last? How did the ultimate question is how many iterations of band names did you go through before you landed on Weird at Last?
Zero.
Wow. Okay.
That demo I showed Garrett, I had released as Weird at Last, and that was like the naming the band Weird at Last was like a kind of split second decision, because I was sitting on the track the night before I'm going to release it. So I'm sitting there like polishing off vocals and trying to mix it down the night before I'm going to put it out there and be like, I don't know. And this is like the first one I just did by myself. I'm sitting in my room and I'm just like, I don't know what to call this project. I don't know what to call this project. I don't want to just do like a self-titled thing because I want this to be a band, you know?
Right.
And I'm a big fan of Welcome to Night Vale.
And so am I.
So I have a poster that's right above my desk that says Weird at Last, God Almighty, Weird at Last, which is from Night Vale. And I looked up at it and was like, I mean, that's kind of perfect, I think. So I had a couple friends over and I was just like, what do you think, Weird at Last? And they're like, yeah, that sounds good. I was like, cool.
It's like, works. I'm always terrible at naming things. So that's why I asked, just because I'm like, how do you land on, you know, we talked about band names and cringiness and, you know, all these sort of things ahead of time. And some of it's in like the hidden pre-show, and some of it's in the actual pre-show, and some of it's in the real show. But, you know, I always wonder like that. So you came up with the name Weird at Last, and I guess Garrett, you approved, or like, how did you, like,
yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Welcome to Night Vale fan,
so it worked out.
And that's like the third episode, I think, they start with that. They only say it like once. I don't know if you've ever listened to the show.
I know of the show. I need to actually listen to it more. It's one of those podcasts.
It's really good.
As a guy that wants the format pushed forward, I enjoy that it exists more than me actually listening to it. Like, I'm glad that somebody made a cool fiction-based, you know, NPR-esque show. Like, someone took that metafiction and then made a show around him. Like, that's cool. I want, you know, if you're going to do that, rock on. Keep doing that. You know, that's cool.
It's a Prairie Home Companion on acid.
Exactly. No, and I love the idea of that. Like I may have not listened to the show, but I'm like, I know why. I'm like, I need to just sit down and listen to it, just because, like, somebody figured out this world and then said, okay, what if somebody did a radio show in that world? I'm like, that's a brilliant way of telling fiction. Why did I think first?
I love Welcome to Night Vale. I've always been a weirdo, so why the hell not? And on top of that, I'm terrible at naming stuff too. I mean, up until then, like I said, we had Thief in the Night. I had a solo chiptune project that was just called Near Lag Experience instead of Near Death. It's terrible.
Wow,
the music was fine, but the
I thought I was horrible by with my podcast name of just of spoofing on a shitty '90s show, you know.
When I saw the name of this podcast, I was pretty stoked on it.
What's funny with the name of the show was that I had made I originally was called My 8-Bit Life, and 8-Bit Life was taken. So I'm like, fine, fuck it, my so-called 8-Bit Life, fuck it, I'll scoop up my so-called life. Go fuck yourself. And that was it. That was the extent of naming the show. Was a fuck it. And that's why I'm like, Weird at Last. That sounds like a really solid name. It's an awesome, you know, it's definitely a pop punk name. It holds itself there, and it can work in that format. I'm just like, how do you land on that? How do you get there? So we're almost out of time. We're pretty much at the hour mark here. And, you know, we've talked about so much stuff. We've talked about the current album. We've talked about things and that. But I always have to ask, and I always ask every artist this, what does the future hold for you guys? Where do you want to go? You know, are you touring? Do you want to tour? Like, what's the plan?
Well, right now we're hoping to get some shows going in February, because anyone who's been following us knows that we haven't actually played a show yet. record came out, we put out a live video, and that's it so far. So,
and our drummer hurt his hand.
Yeah, and our drummer hurt his hand, so he's been laid up, but he's finally back at it. So we're going to be able to get some shows going. Hopefully in February is when we're looking to start with that. I Fight Dragons has been super cool, and they've expressed interest in playing a show with us. So
that would be cool to see.
Hopefully we can get that going in New York. That would be a dream come true.
That would be really cool. That would definitely be, I mean, going with those kind of bands and leading in, being an opening act for those can always springboard you into the right crowd to accept your music. Because like a lot of times when it comes to chiptunes, it's very much requires people to be aware of what the hell is going on, or at least be predisposed to be used to that kind of geeky music. Mm-hmm. Having I Fight Dragons for sure is definitely a band to lead into all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. If we can get that going, I know that would be a really good thing for us. But, you know, most importantly right now, we just want to get playing some shows locally.
This solid goal. I mean, definitely ramp up slow. Because, like, again, I would, you know, I'm always a fan of, like, come to Austin. But I always remember, like, ramp up slow. Get some live shows under your belt, especially with chiptunes, because there's a phrase, and I'm sure Garrett and both of you guys can at least listen to it, especially if you've been to a live show. I always have a phrase when it comes to chiptune show that if something doesn't crash, we're not doing it right.
Right.
You know, because hardware has to fail. Like, it's not a matter of like, oh, we'll, like, no, it will fail. A Game Boy will crash. A Nintendo will freeze up. Something will go wrong because we're taking this hardware and doing things it was never designed to do. we're pushing these Z80 chips way harder than I think that they've ever meant to be pushed. And a Game Boy's going to crash. You know, it's going to happen. So,
for sure.
I always talk with, there's a local chiptunes band here called Chalkboards. They do Game Boy as well and sort of music. And I always joke with the lead singer. He's a guy that actually worked on the theme song for this podcast. And I always joke with him, just like that's the thing. And like a lot of bands have now converted to not having the Game Boy there. Like, they've sort of made a backing track recorded so it goes perfectly. I'm like, no, you got to have a Game Boy. You got to have that element of danger. Because I think that makes it harder. And I think it makes it, you know. For me, it's always that, like, will it crash? Will it work? Will it happen? You know, what will go wrong?
It's the excitement.
It is. That's the punk part. That's why I cued in so quickly to chiptunes.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, it makes me happy to know that here are two guys doing the pop punk side of things, coming in with the guitars, and that's awesome. But even the same regard, trying something new with the format versus the same old electronica stuff, which is not to say that's not good. It's just, it's good to know that there is breadth. There's a wide sort of aspect of this genre of chiptunes that could cover not just simply Chipsoul, not just simply Null Sleep or any of these other big hitters, but also covers like this, you know, pop punk band that's coming in. It's like, hi, we're trying something new, and I'm like, that's awesome. That's really, really cool.
We're pressing start and hanging on for our life.
how we're gonna end it this episode. Jonathan, Garrett, thank you so much for being on the show. Tell people where they can find your music online, how they can, you know, they've heard us talk about it, but how can they, the audience, grab a copy of all this awesome stuff?
You can get our debut album, Cool Weird Future, pretty much anywhere that you download or stream music. If you want to go straight to our Bandcamp, it's weirdatlast.bandcamp.com.
Yes, and I will say, as a person that knows a thing or two about a thing or two, if you buy it off of Bandcamp, that's where they tend to get the most money.
Yes, yes, please.
Feel free to download it for free, because we just want you to listen.
Right, exactly. You know, the Bandcamp is one of those places that I will always say, you know, to go here, because that's,
yeah. I know Bandcamp and Spotify.
So where people find you on Twitter, let's say they want to keep up with all your escapades, maybe they're in the New York area when you guys are playing live and they just want to know.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's Weird at Last Band.
There you go. And of course, you can find them. Same, if you look Weird at Last on Facebook, it's also there as well. They're pretty much everywhere. And they're very, very socially active. So definitely follow them. And if you're in the New York area and they're playing sometime in February, go check them out. Because if they're talking with I Fight Dragons and people like that at that caliber, and those people are interested, that means for an awesome show no matter what. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 there on the Twitter. If you want to catch previous episodes of the podcast, you can go to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find links to show notes, our Twitter account, which is at 8bitlife podcast, and everything else in between. And after you've spent all your money buying all the Weird at Last music, you've given it whatever, and you look back at your pocket, you're like, I got, you know, $1.50 left, head to patreon.com/8bitlife and help the show become bigger, better, and more awesomer. So that's it for today. Tune in next time. Talk to another geek about something completely, and well, in this case, a pair of geeks about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.